Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
Okay, good morning. It's Sunday, the 27th of September, 2009. That makes this Solder Smoke 116. Okay, I guess I'll start off with a little bit of an update on the Cinghiali situation out there in Sabina. I mentioned this to you guys. The Cinghiali are the wild boar. And, you know, I told you about how the, not a sighting, but a hearing of wild boar noises had postponed a camping trip that Billy and I were planning. We later in the month we carried out the camping expedition successfully, but we've still been wondering about the wild boar and how big are they, and you know, what are they like out there. You know, I put up a picture on the blog at soldersmoke.blogspot.com a couple weeks ago, showing a particularly large Cinghiali. We have not yet seen ourselves any of the Cinghiali out there in the Sabina area north of Rome, but we got a report last week from a neighbor out there, a German woman, who told us that she had been awakened by sounds outside close to her house. She thought somebody was breaking in. She was about ready to call the police, and she took a look out the window, and she looked down, and there he was, a Cinghiali. Now she described it as Volkswagen-sized. I don't know. A lot of us were thinking Volkswagen. That's a bit hard to believe. It might have been an exaggeration. Maybe she couldn't see it very well in the dark. I don't know. Maybe not Volkswagen. Maybe I don't know, an old Fiat 500, maybe that size. But anyway, this was an indication that they do get quite big. Now, we were out in the countryside last weekend, and we knew that hunting season was going to start. Hunting season for the Cinghiali started 1 week ago today. And we were out there on Saturday, and there was no problem, nothing different, nothing really noticeable. Certain maybe low-level tension in the air, because we knew that the locals were really really excited about the hunting season getting ready to open. And it opened it with a real bang on Sunday morning, because we were out there in the country house, and all of a sudden, I guess just right around the crack of dawn, no pun intended, you started hearing the shotguns going off, and all through the valley, some of them pretty close. There was obviously a lot of wild boar hunting going on. We thought that they were going to do it at night, but I guess they wisely decided to what they were going to do is go and chase the animals out of their dens or their lairs or their wild boar holes. I don't know. And then that's when they do the shooting. Quite a bit of shotgun fire going on, and I don't know whether they got any or not, but hopefully this will cut down on the wild boar population, so we won't have to worry about the Volkswagen-sized Cinghiali coming after us out there in Sabina. They are apparently quite nasty. Somebody was saying that they went off to a farm where there were a lot of these Cinghialis around, and most of the dogs were that they saw there were three-legged because of the slashing action of the Cinghiali. So not my favorite animal, and hopefully we won't be seeing or hearing too much more from the Cinghiali as hunting season progresses. We were a bit concerned about the all the shotguns going off in the area. They didn't get too close to the house, and I think the hunters know to stay away from the houses. But still, We dressed the kids up in these highway safety vests. We kept them close to the house, but even so, we wanted to be better safe than sorry. So we had all the little kids running around in the yard wearing these brilliant fluorescent highway safety vests. They thought it was all quite cool. All right, let's see what else announcements we have here. Oktoberfest sale. Gentlemen, if you haven't picked up your copy of Solder Smoke, A Global Adventure in Radio Electronics, a.k.a. Solder Smoke, the book, now is the time to do so. Specifically, today is the time to do so. Our friends at Lulu.com, the folks who take care of the printing and the shipping and the mailing and all that, have announced an Oktoberfest sale, and it's 25% off, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's 25% off. Check it out. It's all up on the blogspot.com site, soldersmoke.blogspot.com. If you go to the blog, I have an announcement up there. The most recent article is about the Oktoberfest sale and how you can take advantage of it. And I've also got a note up there about how we've managed to drop the base price of the book down to $19.99. There's now two different versions of the book out there. They're identical except for a bit of a difference in the kind of paper that's used, and a bit of a difference in price, and that's the result of the paper that used. What's happened is that there's a kind of paper available in North America for U.S. printers that's not available to the Lulu printers in the U.K. and Spain. So what it comes down to is we were able to knock about $3 off the price of the book for those who are opting to buy from the U.S. printer. Now, anybody can opt to buy from the U.S. printer, but, of course, if you're in the U.K. or elsewhere in Europe or further east, you might lose any advantage when you consider shipping costs. So we have two versions up there, one from a U.S. printer. Now, anybody can order from that one, but again, you have to consider shipping costs. And we also have a version that will print and be available from the UK and Spanish printers of Lulu.com. So check out the two versions. What I advise you to do is just play around a little bit with the different costs and shipping costs and see what is the most economical way for you to get the book. But again, I think today is the day because it's Oktoberfest sale at Lulu.com. Check it out. Another sale that we have going, let me get away from all the crass commercialism here as quick as I can. You'll recall that we have our coffee mug, t-shirt, and bumper sticker store at Cafe Press. You can get some of these really, I must say, snappy bumper stickers. You can get a coffee mug with the Solder Smoke logo. You can, get a t-shirt that says, my other car was homebrewed from Junk Box Parts, things like that. All the important things that you might want to have, especially as Hamfest season kicks in. Go to Cafe Press. You can reach it from the blog, from soldersmoke.blogspot.com. If you go to the upper left, there's a coffee mug there. Just click on the coffee mug. We really had the chance to knock down the prices on almost everything there. I think all the prices dropped by 25% or in some cases 50%. So everything is now quite reasonable. And I hope you check it out. Get those bumper stickers. Got to have a coffee mug. I mean, come on. This is Solder Smoke. It's all about sitting around the shack drinking coffee. How better to do it than with a Solder Smoke coffee mug? All right. Hey, speaking of reasonable and purchases, I think I mentioned that I recently had an anniversary. I completed my 51st orbit of the sun, and for my birthday, Elisa got me a Kindle, one of these Kindle Amazon.com Kindle electronic book readers. And I must say, it is really cool. I really like it. I carry it around now. You know, one of the problems of being a real a knack victim is that every time you go on a short trip or on vacation, you stand there in front of the bookshelves, and you say to yourself, "Which one should I take with me?" and you throw this one in there, and oh yeah, well, maybe the ARRL handbook. Oh, got to have that. Oh, you got to have at least a dozen editions of Sprat. You never know. And you know, maybe the Radio Engineer's Handbook by Terman. And the next thing you know, you're up against your weight limit with American Airlines. And not only that, you're going to suffer back problems trying to lug this bag across the landscape. Well, gentlemen, I think Kindle is the solution. It's a tiny little thing. It looks like one paperback book, and I understand it can hold several hundred, if not a thousand, different books. I currently have loaded into it just one, because I'm reading The Mountains of St. Francis by Walter Alvarez. Alvarez is the geologist who discovered the iridium layer in the Earth's crust, a bit of the Earth's crust with suspiciously high levels of iridium in it, and a noticeable presence of fossils below it, and a dearth of fossils above it. So Walter Alvarez concluded that this had something to do with a meteor or comet impact that apparently had the effect of taking out the dinosaurs. So Alvarez did a lot of his work here in the Apennine Mountains of Italy, very close to where we are, and real close to where we have the country house. So I thought it'd be interesting, and it is interesting, and I have it loaded up into Kindle. It's really easy to read. It is quite similar to reading a paper book. It's not like reading off the computer screen. The way they have the display set up, it's quite nice, and it's not this glaring screen. You're not staring into this big light bulb or this big bright thing. It's much more like reading paper, and they have the cover of it, so it actually kind of feels like the same kind of weight and the same kind of like, I don't know, it's sort of similar to the experience of reading a paper book. So I was, I guess, at first skeptical about these e-book readers, but I'm becoming more of a believer. And here's what's really going to be important for our purposes, Solder Smoke fans and NAC victims. I'm sitting here with Billy, and we're looking at the Kindle, and I'm looking over at my bookshelf thinking, how can I get some of these books, especially some of the old ones, in there? And there among the bookshelf, there among the books, is my collection, cherished collection, of paper versions of Sprat, the Journal of the GQRP Club. And you know, I think I've mentioned this, that I find it almost impossible, or at least very dangerous, to leave the house with my wife and kids without stuffing at least one or two, sometimes three issues of Sprat into my pockets. Because, you know, when you go out, there's always going to be those, you know, 10, 15, 20-minute periods where you're standing out in front of the shoe store as your wife and daughter go in there and, you know, and do what people do in the shoe store, I suppose, what women do in the shoe store. And me and Billy will be, you know, out on the bench, if we're lucky, out in front of the store, just standing there waiting for them to get done. It's really important at this point to have reading material with you. Billy has picked up on this. Billy never goes anywhere without some form of book or magazine in hand. And I think he got this from me, watching me, you know, religiously stick a Sprat in my pocket as we left the house. Gentlemen, now I can take all the Sprats with me. All of them. They're You know, I have the CD from the GQRP Club of all the Sprats in PDF form. And the new version of Kindle just reads PDF automatically. I have a slightly older version, the Kindle 2, and you have to go through some sort of conversion process. And I've been playing around with it. I haven't quite got it yet, but I'm very confident that soon I will have all the editions of Sprat in my Kindle. And I've also ordered, and I haven't yet received the CD for QRP Quarterly. I want to get that in there too. So, with any luck, in a little while, I will have a truly massive collection of QRP and homebrew related reading material in my Kindle, and I will be well prepared for those shopping waiting periods that happen every time you head out to the house. All right, let's see what else I wanted to mention. Oh, watching QRPL. I love watching QRPL, and there was a series of messages there. Somebody suggested that we establish something called Kite Antenna Day and have a special day in which everybody would use kites to support their antennas. I'm all for it. I think we should do this. I think we need Kite Antenna Day. And it reminded me of my experiences with kites. I've never used a kite to support an antenna, as Marconi did. More on Marconi in a minute. But I did take one of the kites, the Scott Sled, that was in one of the editions of Spratt. I don't really recall which one it was, but there was a really good design for a Scott Sled kind of kite that is pretty much ideal for carrying antennas up to great heights. When we were out in the Azores, I needed a kite to carry a camera up. This is my Kite Antenna Photography Adventure, KAP, CAP, the Cap Caper. Yeah, Billy and I were out in the Azores, and we had been messing around with the AstroCam, the Estes AstroCam rocket. My wife bought me the a rocket that I had coveted as a kid. I could never afford the AstroCam. But when we were in the Dominican Republic many years ago, my wife bought me the AstroCam. We still have it proudly displayed here in the I0N2CQR shack. But we had the AstroCam. We shot the rocket up. We took a lot of pictures up there from 200, 300, 400, 500 feet. Great fun. And this got us thinking, we need a kite camera. We thought we were the first ones to think of this. But through the miracle of the internet, I soon discovered that we were not alone in this madness, and that there were lots of people out there thinking of ways of putting kites on cameras and taking pictures from aloft. You know, it's one of those things where you don't know why you want to do it, you just do. And anyway, I needed a big kite, so I took the design from Spratt, and I scaled it up, I think, by about 50%. I just took all the dimensions and multiplied by 1.5 and built this truly awesome a kite, made it out of plastic garbage bags and fiberglass fishing poles and duct tape. And man, that thing flew. That thing produced so much lift that on a windy day in the Azores, it really made you worried whether it was going to take you or at least several of your fingers with it. It was scary. It was big, black, ominous looking thing. It had these two kind of vent holes cut in it. It made it sort of look like this evil face floating over the peaceful Azores Islands. And I hung from it a camera with a little N555 timer circuit on it and let that thing hang over the island. I had the timer set to fire the camera every 30 seconds or so, or every minute. So we flew the kite up there for 15 minutes or a half hour and shot a roll of 35 millimeter film, and it was great fun. All this is detailed in the book. You can read about it in the book. And again, the book is available from lulu.com. All the links are on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Kite Antenna Day. I'm all for it. I think we should vote to your representatives in Congress. Have a special day set aside for kite antennas. Speaking of antennas, some guys like to work on antennas. Some guys prefer to be at the workbench, and I have always been more of a workbench guy. I'm not crazy about going out there and building antennas. And I think most of that is because I've been in a real urban environment for the last 10 years or so, and you get those weird looks from the neighbors when you start throwing rocks with strings on them into the trees. They just don't understand. This was a real problem for me in the Azores because my job there came with a certain amount of prominence in the community. And, you know, most places that you go, frankly, you don't care whether the neighbors think you're nuts. But out there, I had to be kind of worried about that. And when they saw me out there with these antenna projects, they started to wonder, you know how it is. Anyway, so I've been more of a workbench guy than an antenna guy. But now that we have this country place, and I have my HW8 positioned out there, I thought, wow, let's do something new and different in the antenna area. At first, I just took the rock and threw a wire up in the trees, and I made some contacts, but it was far from satisfactory. So I looked around the shack last week before we went out there, and there was a fairly good quantity of 300-ohm TV twin lead here. I had a whole bunch of AC line cord that I bought down at the little lighting store, the little hardware store here in Trastevere. I had this really neat kind of centerpiece for a doublet antenna. It looked like it was just made for twin lead to come up from the transmitter and to connect and to hold, to be the centerpiece of a dipole to hang from the tree. There were these tall kind of Roman pines that would be good antenna supports. And well, you know how it is. A plan came together. I had the Pi Network antenna tuner that I'd picked up from the Trastevere flea market last year. It was all coming together. So I did a little bit of the preparatory solder work here in the shack before we went out to the country. Then we brought the whole thing out there with us, and I was soon tossing rocks up into the trees just like in the old days. And the next thing you know, I had I guess you'd call it a doublet antenna up there. Just not even quite sure how long each piece of wire is. It looks like the whole thing would be kind of a half wave at 40 meters, so about 20 meters of wire up there, fed in the center. And the twin lead comes down, goes to the Pi Network antenna tuner. And man, this thing tunes up really fine on 40, 15, and 20. I haven't really tried it on 80 meters, but I should give it a shot. But I've been making all kinds of contacts out there. I had great fun last weekend working with this antenna. I made contacts on 40, 20, and 15. Haven't made a contact on 15 in a long time. But I fired this thing up. There were a few stations down on the low end of 15 meters last Saturday and Sunday. And I worked a fella out in the Faroe Islands, which was kind of neat. So I've really enjoyed working with the antennas and getting back, making some CW contacts out there. We weren't out there this week because we've got a couple things going on this weekend. But we'll probably be out there next weekend, and I hope to be on the air. Billy is off on a school trip. He's out in Umbria. And, a three-night, four-day school trip. And, frankly, it's driving his mother and me nuts a little bit. We're not used to having him away. He comes back this afternoon, not a moment too soon. You guys know how it is. He's only 11, but they want to go off. They took the whole class on this trip up to Umbria, and he seems to be having a good time. But one of the rules is that they said you're not allowed to call your folks because they want to give the kids a measure of independence. Too much independence for me. Anyway, he'll be back today, and looking forward to his return. Let's see. Looking around, what else? Things we've been talking about. I mentioned that MythBusters was in Popular Mechanics. Another thing I got for my birthday, really grateful for this, was a subscription to The New Scientist. I occasionally mention The New Scientist here. It's a wonderful magazine from the UK. It's a weekly science magazine, sort of popular science, but sort of serious popular science, I guess, and kind of in the vein of The Scientific American, but I think it's better. And weekly. And so Elisa and the kids got me a subscription. And lo and behold, in the first issue, there are the MythBusters in The New Scientist. A discussion of the MythBusters and The New Scientist. These guys are moving up in the world. So congratulations to Adam and Jamie there for coverage in The New Scientist. Hey, another thing I came across, and you guys are going to really like this. A video, and I think the video was first reported on Hackaday. I keep an eye on Hackaday. Hackaday, that website, man, they are not exactly knack victims. They're into all kinds of, they're more into the weird kind of computer stuff, but they've got an element of the knack there, and they spot some stuff every once in a while that's really of interest to us. And they found some recently resurfaced videos from Steve Roberts. You recall Steve was the guy who during the 1980s built the behemoth bicycle. And in the very early days of the internet, Steve took off on a coast-to-coast bicycle trip on a recumbent bicycle equipped with all kinds of computer and ham radio communications gear, and became sort of the guru of mobile off the grid but not offline life, and went along and got a lot of really good press coverage. Wrote some books. Steve is a great writer, and anyway, videos about his bike and his bike adventures popped up on YouTube. I have links to those videos. There's part one and part two on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com site. You should really check it out. And then after that, after posting those videos, I decided to check out Steve's website, which is microships, not chips, but microships.com. The link is on the blog also, on my blog. And found a really interesting collection of articles that he's written. His story as a radio amateur was, I thought, really inspirational. And he got his start right around the same age that most of us got started in this thing, around 12, 13 years old. He talks about how he was really into the technical part of the hobby. And, he said that he was kind of mediocre in school. They said that he had really high test scores, but wasn't living up to his potential. And there was one line in his story about this that I thought was really, it really kind of resonated. He said, "I didn't care. I had a secret life." And the secret life was his secret life as a novice or radio amateur. So I really, really recommend that you take a look at the videos and then visit Steve's site. There's lots and lots of stuff there, and I've just started looking at it, so I think it's going to keep me busy for a while. Great stuff, and thanks to Steve Roberts for that. AA1TJ, Michael AA1TJ is back in business. All summer I've been wondering what Michael's been up to. I think he's been out in the garden and engaged in other summertime activities, but he's back in the shack. He's back in the Hobbit Hall. You know, Michael has an unusual shack. It's underground. He lives out there in Vermont, and when he got back into ham radio, he brought a backhoe out to his property and dug a big hole in the ground. Well, not that big, but big enough to put kind of a two- or three-level shack underground. He's got one level is for storage, and one level is for construction, and that's where he works his miracles with QRP, and especially with kind of minimalist QRP, minimalist ancient solid-state QRP technology. I guess that's the way we could put it. And lately, he's been fooling around with really kind of bare-bones stuff, iron pyrite radios, and then most recently, I think, really interesting stuff using old point-contact transistors. And Michael has had some really great success, really inspiring stuff. And I've got one of his postings to QRPL repeated on the Solder Smoke blog. So check it out. And it's I'll try to put kind of an updated piece there too that he put on about some more of his operating success that he's had with these really old point contact transistors. Fine stuff there. Very interesting. Oh, here's something you guys will find interesting. I had a, as part of my work, as part of my day job, I occasionally have to go to receptions in the evening, and this goes with the territory. And I got to tell you that most of them have absolutely no connection to our world of radio and electronics and the knack and home brewing and solder smoke, nothing. It's completely apart. Now, there's good things about that because I think it's kind of nice to have a real separation between work and hobby, and I certainly have that. But every once in a while, the two worlds collide, and that's what happened this week. When was it? Thursday night. Yeah, Thursday night, I had to go to a diplomatic reception, and it was at the residence of the U.S. ambassador in Rome, a magnificent place called Villa Taverna, and it's really an amazingly beautiful place. And so off I went, and before I went, I took a look at the guest list, and there were a lot of people that I needed to talk to because of work responsibilities, but there was one name on the list that really caught my eye. Princess Elettra Marconi. Wow, Princess Elettra Marconi. You know, Marconi named his yacht, his ship, Elettra, and he also named his daughter Elettra. And the daughter was born in 1930, and I met her on Thursday night at Villa Taverna. Really, almost a moving experience from the perspective of somebody who's a radio amateur and who's read a lot about Marconi. I saw her on the guest list, and so when I got there, I talked to the protocol people, and I said, "Please point out to me Princess Elettra," and they did right away. I went over, and she's a very charming lady, and we talked. I told her that I was a radio amateur. I told her that I had read quite a bit about her father, and she is quite active in keeping her father's memory alive, and does a lot of work. She's written a book about her dad, and she knew all about the recent books that have come out. I mentioned to her Thunderstruck, which was about her father, and she said, "Oh yeah, I knew that book. I read it. Very interesting. It's all mixed together with that weird murder up in London." And I said, "Yeah." So she knew about it, and anyway, it was a great pleasure to meet her. And to have that kind of personal connection with her dad. The next morning when I got up, I fired up Google, and I Googled her, learned a little bit more about her life. And then I also wanted to look for images, because I wanted to put something on the blog about this meeting. And I found a number of images, but then one really jumped out. And it's really a very poignant image, and I'll tell you guys about it. It's on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page, so you could take a look at it now if you'd like, or look at it later. But I really think you should take a look, because it's a picture of Marconi and his wife on the good ship Elettra, which was his yacht. And in the picture, his wife is holding the little girl who became the woman that I met on Thursday night. It's her eighth birthday. It was Elettra's eighth birthday. They're on the ship Elettra, and the 8-year-old girl has the sailor's cap from one of the crewmen, and it says Elettra on it, Elettra, which was kind of cute. And Marconi himself is standing there. The three of them are standing there. Marconi's kind of beaming up at the little girl, and she's looking down at her dad. And it was her eighth birthday. And the caption was made it really, really sad, because they said that was the day that Marconi died. The picture apparently was taken in the morning, and he died. He died that afternoon. So a really kind of poignant Marconi picture, but very nice to meet Princess Elettra. She's a charming lady, and again, it was really nice to have that kind of personal connection with the great inventor, a person who truly had the knack and did so much to move the radio art forward, to create it, I guess. All right, great. Now it's time for
Sorry Smoke Mailbag.
I love him.
Indeed. Yeah, Solder Smoke Mailbag. I got some great email from our friend out there on the West Coast, Jeff KO7M. He's He's back on the air and back in the air, flying that that Piper Cub out. He told me he was going to I think he was going to fly out to Idaho. He was going to go to some air shows. He's got that beautiful Piper Cub that we've been talking about. And guys, man, this really makes you envious. I've been talking about camping. Jeff takes off on that airplane. He flies out to lakes that people rarely visit. And then he parks it. He goes to air shows. And he camps. He camps out. And he camps under the wing of the airplane. Oh, man. Wouldn't that be cool? Pitch your little tent or just throw the sleeping bag down under the wing of your Piper Cub. Crack open a can of Beanie Weenies. Maybe make a little fire over there. You know, cook some coffee away from the airplane, I suppose. I've never done any of this kind of camping. But what a great way to travel. So thanks for sharing that with us, Jeff, and happy landings. Yeah. Let's see. I got an email from Nick, KB1SNG. I'd asked about the beeps that I was hearing, or the beeps that were reported in Solder Smoke 111. Nick took a look at it, and he thinks it's some sort of filter ringing. He thinks it's something to do with the filtering that I sometimes use to roll off the weird S sounds that we've discovered that my mouth has been producing all these years, unbeknownst to me. But anyway, thanks for that, Nick. Nick also consulted some websites about how many horsepower 5 watts represents and how much 5 watts compares to, you know, in the horsepower and all that. He came up with something, and he said that 5 watts represents less power than is consumed by the human heart. I never known that. So anyway, we're running less power than the heart. And in one of my recent readings, I forget where I saw this. I think it was in Discover Magazine. They were saying that when you're really thinking hard, the human brain runs at about 20 watts. So I guess this makes us, heart-wise, I guess we're sort of, I guess in both areas, we are QRO, gentlemen. We've gone QRO, both in heart and mind, QRO. I don't know. We'll have to think about that. I'm sure there's a message in there somewhere. Simon, G0FCU. Also involved in Iron Pyrite Radio. Mike KL7R would be so pleased. He was the one who sent me the Iron Pyrite, the Fool's Gold that I used in the Fool's Gold detector. Simon was hiking up in the Swiss Alps with his daughters and discovered a bit of his own Iron Pyrite, took some samples back from Switzerland back to the UK, and has been struggling to get an Iron Pyrite radio going, a crystal radio with Iron Pyrite Fool's Gold in place of the traditional Galena. And he hasn't had much luck with it. He asked me for suggestions, and the best that I could do was to send him the link to the video that I did based on the radio that Billy and I made from the Iron Pyrite that Mike had sent down from Alaska. And the video shows our success in kind of tickling the Iron Pyrite with the phosphor bronze cat whisker that I got from Antique Electronics, Antique Electronic Sales, AES. And anyway, I hope that helps you, Simon. You should be able to get that thing going. There's plenty to listen to there in the UK, some of those strong, powerful AM broadcast stations. So good luck. Let us know how that works out, and I hope you do have luck there with the Iron Pyrite radio. Pete, XE2XPL, sends in an interesting email about the South Cars Nets. I remember always hearing the South Cars Nets on HF. They're still going on HF, quite a few check-ins, but they've kind of been expanding into the world of voice over the internet, VOIP. And they have some technical nets, and Steve and Pete mentions that at on Fridays at 0300 UTC, which wouldn't be a bad time for me sometimes. Sometimes I'm up that early. That would put it around 5 o'clock here. That's right around my shack time. They have on the voice over the internet portion of South Cars, they have some technical discussions, and apparently they bring in an expert and people can talk to him, and then they discuss whatever the technical topic of the day is. So check that out. If you check out southcars.com or Google southcars.com, you should find all the information about how to link up with the South Cars guys. It does sound interesting, especially the technical nets. Speaking of technical stuff, I was asking for help in trying to locate the article that caused me to, back in 1975 or 1976, try to build a direct conversion receiver. I've frequently mentioned this, that it was one of my early efforts at receiving building, and it came heartbreakingly close to success, but, you know, close but no cigar, guys. I didn't get the thing going. I realize now that I failed to get the oscillator, the local oscillator, oscillating. I was so close. Maybe I wound the toroid wrong. That was probably it, something like that. Maybe I just didn't have enough feedback. If I knew then what I know now, I could have been a successful teenage radio builder, but no. It was a failure. Anyway, I asked for help in locating the article, and Gene, W3PM, Gene's the guy who did so much good work on whisper radios and provided me with the idea for my direct conversion, bare bones whisper transmitter. He came up with an article. I think it was in the July 1976 issue of QRP. It was J. Rusgrove's Herring Aid 5. You remember, this was the companion receiver to the Tuna Tin 2. The Herring Aid 5 was a simple direct conversion receiver. It was varactor-tuned, and that was the sort of the distinguishing characteristic of the receiver that I tried to build. It said that all the parts were available from local Radio Shack stores, and I kind of remember that too. So this might be the article, but I'm not quite sure, because the article in QST contains quite a bit of guidance on how to lay out the PC board. And I vaguely remember just doing this in a kind of haphazard, on my own kind of way. So this might have been the article. The timing was around right, just around right. It was the summer of 76, the summer I graduated from high school. I was getting ready to go into the Army, but I had a few months there, so I was doing some home brewing. This might have been it. But I don't know. It doesn't seem quite right. Maybe Jay published that article in another form without quite so much information. That might be it. But I might just go ahead and try to build this receiver just to get the vindication, because it's from the right period. There's no ICs in there. And it is a varactor tune. So I might go ahead and take a shot at the Herring Aid 5 project just so that I could say that I put an end to this long-lingering receiver project failure. So thanks for sending that along, Gene. Now that I think about it, that might have been it. I was looking at the article this morning, and, it was kind of stirring up some memories. We'll give it another shot. Greg, OH2FFY, is back in Finland after a trip to the Azores. Fine business on that, Greg. Glad to see you had a good trip, and I'm glad you got around the island. That's terrific. He was on Sao Miguel, the island that I lived on for 3 years. David, VE7CQY, another fellow with the knack in British Columbia. He's not out in the woods. He's more in the city or in an area that he describes sort of as British Columbia's Napa Valley. He described a project that Billy and I might be interested in, a homebrew light tracker. A little op-amp-based project that when you turn it on, it kind of causes the device to always face whatever light that you're holding. And as you move the light around the room, the thing a little kind of robotically track you. Billy found it intriguing, but I got to say, Billy's attention has been pulled away, as happens many times to many kids these days, to the fascinating world of the internet, and specifically the iPod Touch. He has an iPod Touch with a Wi-Fi connection. He's doing all kinds of amazing things there, and I think that's got his attention now. So maybe we'll build the light tracker one of these days, but for now, Billy is off in Apple iPod Touch land. We got some nice feedback on Aurora. I talked about how... Last time I talked about how we think we solved one of the other mysteries of my scientific and electronic youth, and that was the Aurora that I recall seeing as a kid in New York. Don't see too much Aurora in suburban New York, New York City, but we did, and we're now almost certain that it was August 4th, 1972. And John N0WL writes in that he recalls seeing that aurora from northern Michigan, and the way he describes it is very similar to what I saw. Also on aurora, our good friend Wes, W7ZOI, wrote in with some auroral memories of his own. He was up, I think, in Oregon or Idaho, I'm not sure. I think it was in eastern Oregon. And it was 1957. He was a very young ham radio operator at the time. And he said because of the cloud cover, he couldn't see any of the aurora, but certainly felt the effects of it, and the effects show up and in the entries to his logbook. So Wes was kind enough to send along his recollections and his log entries from those from that period, and I have them up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. All right, that's it. Let's see. I'm looking at my list. I think we've gone through everything on the list for this week. Again, Oktoberfest, guys. Oktoberfest madness. If you're going to buy the Solder Smoke book, today's a good day to buy it. Because especially for people who are ordering from the U.S. printer, the price has been brought down, and it'll be brought down even further by the 25% savings being offered by the Cafe Press guys. And the details are up there on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Check it out. Also, be sure to check out the Cafe Press coffee mug, bumper sticker, and T-shirt store. You can reach that just by clicking on the mug. The coffee mug in the upper left-hand corner of the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. All right, that brings an end to today's commercial announcements and to today's edition of Solder Smoke, 7-3 from Rome.